This is Active Lehigh Valley on 88.1 WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Hello and welcome to Active Lehigh Valley. This program is generously supported by St. Luke's University Health Network, and our aim is to encourage listeners to be happy, healthy, and active. I'm your host, Margaret McConnell, the executive director here at WDIY, and I am honored to have with me today Mandy Marquardt, a professional track cyclist for Edge Cycling and a member of USA Cycling's national team. Mandy is also based here in the Lehigh Valley, training at the Valley Preferred Cycling Center, and she's a role model for athletes living with type 1 diabetes. Mandy, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Margaret.
Yeah, this is awesome. You're the second Olympian I've had on this program, and I'm kind of an Olympic junkie.
I'm not an Olympian yet.
Well, you are on an Olympic team.
Yeah, it's been a process.
All right, sure. But you're going to get there. I have confidence.
Been close.
I watch all of the Olympics. I've been to the Olympics once in Europe when they were in London. I play zero sports. I am absolutely not athletic. I can't walk a straight line and do anything else at the same time. But I love the Olympics.
We love the support. That's a big part of it.
I just love watching it.
Have you
seen
track cycling?
No.
Oh, okay. That's got to be on your bucket list, at least for LA 28.
Okay. All right. We'll see if we can make that happen.
If not, you got to come to the velodrome here.
Yeah. You know what? I've never been there. I've lived here my entire life.
I hear that a lot. And it is a bit upsetting because it's such a cool sport. And it's really cheap. And there's food. And you get all these international riders that come into town. And
Yeah,
I mean, people are big fans of the Iron Pigs and the Phantoms. And yeah, cycling is just as exciting. We just got to get the people over.
That's not why we're here. We're here to talk about you and the velodrome, if you'd like to talk about that. But why don't we start kind of at the beginning and what got you into cycling?
So I'm originally from Germany. My father's German and my mom's American. So my first language is German. So if I make any mistakes... But I don't have an accent because kids were mean and bullies, and I got rid of it.
Oh.
But when I was about 7, we moved to Florida, and I was really active in swimming and tennis, and I really wanted to do a triathlon. I had a stress fracture in my foot from tennis, and I would say back then there wasn't a lot on recovery in young kids, and you just kind of go, go, go. And yeah, the bike was just something that intrigued me. I mean, my dad told me, okay, to do a triathlon, you have to know how to ride a bike. And I mean, I knew how to ride a bike, but to be competitive. So he found the velodrome that was in Florida. It was the only one in Florida. And it was in South Florida. And yeah, I fell in love with it. I was definitely one of the youngest there. And there are all these older people. Definitely, I gravitated more towards people that were older, kind of took me under their wing. And yeah, it's just an amazing community. And so I started doing like a lot of the group rides early in the morning. Can't believe when I was like 14, I would go to meet group rides at like 6 a.m. when it was dark. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know if I would let my child do that. But it was different back then. And
yeah,
I just fell in love with the sport and the community. And I would actually come up here to race when I was younger. So I did my first nationals in Houston, and I had a coach up in New York. There was another coach in Florida, and they had connections. And so I would then come to the velodrome. We'd all have a big van of kids with bikes, and we would come to the track on Tuesdays and some Saturdays and do some of the racing. And I just fell in love with it because I think it reminded me a lot of Germany. And so, yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns in my career, but that's really how I got into it. I fell in love with it. I did triathlons for a few years, and just cycling was just an exciting, exhilarating sport.
So how does it become a career?
I didn't even know back then. It's just you do something, you love it, and it kind of goes from there. And my parents have always been really supportive. And so when I was 14, my parents had separated. I have a great relationship with both of them. But to go to the next level in cycling, you go to Europe. And so I went to Germany to pursue international racing because that's it gets more competitive there. And I raced for the state because Germany has different states. And then I raced for Germany for a small period of time. And there was one of the training camps that we had, and there was routine blood work and VO2 max testing. I was probably there for like a year, and I'd competed at nationals, and I was third in one of the events. And so that kind of got me into the program. And so I did this testing, and that's where they noticed that my blood sugars were elevated. And so I didn't really know what that meant. I was kind of like, well, it's probably going to get better. I didn't have the best breakfast that morning either. You know, it's like 15 years old and you just
donuts.
Yeah, it was like probably some pastries, pretzels and stuff. Yeah. It was like the German pretzel with some butter.
Yeah.
Definitely very carb heavy. So yeah, it didn't help. And also just exerting myself, like, definitely elevates your blood sugar because there's that stress element to it too. But my blood sugar never really went down. And so my father picked me up and we went to the hospital.
Mm.
And I was there for 2 weeks.
Whoa.
They were very adamant about making sure to just test everything, to test how my organs were functioning. When I hear today how quick it is, but I think it's just you go in and out of the doctor appointment, but now the resources are more available. Back then it was just, there were injections, there were your testing. It was different back then just because I didn't know anybody else with type 1, so it just wasn't as common,
mm-hmm.
at least for me in Germany at that time. And yeah, just getting the help that I needed was important, and just getting back on my bike. And my next goal was just, all right, in 6-7 months, I have nationals coming up. And that was my goal to race nationals. And I ended up on the same spot that I was before I was diagnosed. So that was a pretty awesome turning point. Just like, I can do this, but it was definitely going to be a challenge.
Well, how did you adjust? Did you have to adjust your training and the way you competed or the way you approached competition once you were diagnosed?
I had to work closely with my endocrinologist, and I worked with a nutritionist. But, you know, I was in denial, too. I was a kid. I was just like, why do I have to do this?
Mm.
Why do I have to think about all these extra things? I was embarrassed taking insulin in front of people. I would just eat German chocolate and not take insulin because I was like, well, maybe it'll just get better. But I was just so tired all the time, and I was just not feeling great. So yeah, it was important that I was exercising. So that was the biggest thing. That was definitely really helpful in managing my diabetes. And just having a routine was really important too.
Mm-hmm.
And just having a support system.
So what drew you to track cycling in particular? As I said earlier, I've never been to the velodrome, but I imagine that it's a pretty intense experience.
It is. There's a lot of races happening at the velodrome, so there's endurance events and sprint events. Endurance events are a bit longer, and sprint events are shorter. I kind of compare it to track and field, where you have the sprinters and the endurance runners.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more of the sprinter. Mm-hmm. So my distances are pretty short. They're anywhere from 300 meters to a kilometer, and my training is pretty specific. A lot of weightlifting, a lot of specific training. On the bike, I don't do a lot of miles. It's always funny when people ask me, how many miles do you ride? It's like, I might ride a mile in one training session. It just depends what the workout is, but it's full maximal intensity. So the events that I compete in, there are 4 of them. It's called the sprint, the Kieran, the team sprint, and the kilometer. And yeah, they're intense. And it's definitely a big mental game too, because you're racing all day or over 4 or 5 days. So there's a big mental aspect. There's aerodynamics. There's, you know, we're on a fixed gear bike. We have no brakes. It's definitely safer because you're not having somebody slam on their brakes. We change our own gears. So when we're at big races like World Cups or Pan American Championships, we have mechanics. But the track bike is very different from the road bike because it has no brakes. It's fixed gear. And yeah, we're basically our own mechanic. And I love how simple it is. Sometimes a road bike can be a little complicated. Like, I don't like working on my own road bike. But I love going for road rides around the Lehigh Valley. I think the road riding is great. But we have a great facility here, the Valley Preferred Cycling Center. And so racing is every summer from May to September. So usually I'm racing in June because that's where some of the international riders come. And then we have one indoor Olympic-sized standard velodrome, and it's only in Los Angeles, California. One of the most expensive places ever. But that's kind of where the national team is based out of. And that's where I spend most of my time too, between LA and Pennsylvania.
Mm. Okay. And you were just there, right?
I was just there, yeah. Okay. And I'm going to head back December 2nd. And that's the hard part, too. It's like you make a lot of sacrifices and I'm going to be gone during the holidays. And there's many times that I've spent the holidays there with a host family. So there's a family that I stay with the last 7 years, actually.
Oh, wow.
And I shipped out my old car. It's like definitely a full investment and your circle is small, but it's part of it.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, you said there's no brakes on the track bike?
Yeah, no brakes.
So you sprint, but then you have to stop.
Well, you don't like just stop all of a sudden. You slowly start to slow down, I guess. Okay. People always ask me, it's like, it's kind of like riding a bike. You just kind of know what to do. But yeah, you resist the pedal on the way up. Like it's not going to just stop you like a beach cruiser. There's always some momentum, but you're just resisting the pedal. And so that slows you down too.
Okay. Okay. So you kind of coast.
A bit. Yeah. Okay. I mean, your legs do keep moving, so it's not like you can just stop pedaling.
Mm.
Yeah. It's not as hard as people think it is. And there's bikes that you could use at the velodrome. I think people could go out there and rent a bike or even take just their normal bikes and ride around. The facility is always open.
Yeah. All right. So this is about being active. And so we want to leave a message with people about, you know, obviously you have a specific way that you're active and it's your career, but you've overcome health challenges or you continue to overcome them being that you're a diabetic, you know. So one of the messages and what I want to talk about is how can people do the same thing, you know, and continue, you know, doing what they love or have it not prevent them from being active?
Yeah, I think it's just finding something that you're passionate about, right? So like my limiting factor was diabetes. It was like a huge variable that was thrown at me. But I looked at it like, well, what do I need to do? What are the resources available? I'm kind of more like solution-based. I guess it's always like just been who I am. And kind of maybe my father saying do it or don't do it. It's definitely more of a mindset, right? So habits take time. And so for years I was an athlete and why would I just stop competing because I was diagnosed with diabetes, but yet I have these resources to be able to take care of myself and learn my body. And I know there's no one-size-fits-all approach to diabetes because I race for an all-diabetic cycling team. And so I learned a lot through that, just surrounding myself with the right people, and I think that's important too. So the way you talk to yourself, the way you surround yourself with the people that you are with, you know, and it's a small circle, but yeah, it makes you see what's important. And so for me, it was just getting back on my bike, and that was the motivating factor, is just taking one step at a time. So when things get overwhelming, okay, I did have a book, a diary, and I had everything from like the food that affected my blood sugars to like how I felt. And it was a short period of time that I had this, but it made me see like what factors contributed to me not feeling well or like what mindset I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't mean that not every day is great and perfect, but I think making time for yourself and seeing what's important, what you're passionate about. I mean, that helps me to kind of live this active lifestyle and have achieved so much with diabetes. I mean, I've been able to achieve so much with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made me more appreciative of the journey as mm-hmm. well.
And it's made you an advocate, right?
Yeah. 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 That's just a bonus. Mm. But I'm glad to be able to use my platform to help other people.
Yeah.
Because I felt pretty alone when I was diagnosed. So yeah. Seeing kids, meeting people in the community, I think it's really important that people see what's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, you mentioned you were with a team made up of entirely diabetics, and that was Team Novo Nordisk. So you were with them for 15 years?
Yeah, the world's first all-diabetes professional cycling team.
How was that?
It was such a great experience. They're a phenomenal team, and they're still doing so many great things. The men's pro team is racing worldwide, and it was so great when I joined in 2010 because I was just recently diagnosed in 2008. The team back then wasn't all type 1. It was a mix. And I can't remember. It was 2013, 2014. It all became all type 1. But it definitely opened my eyes to also racing. We definitely had a lot of help and support from the physiologists on the team, and we had training camps. So it definitely opened my eyes racing at another level with diabetes and having that support system and then going to schools and talking about it, that was really hard for me because it was just a recent diagnosis. Mm. I remember being at some of the media camps and, you know, we'd ensure that we are only just sharing our stories and not giving medical advice. I think that's the important thing. People are always asking us, like, what should my blood sugar be or what should this be? It's like you have to find what works for you and work with your healthcare provider. So for us, it's just we are basically showing what is possible with diabetes. And that was really hard because I would just end up crying sometimes because it was just an emotional journey. And people are looking up to you and it's like, well, I haven't figured it out yet. Uh-huh. But I've learned now, like, I'm still not, I don't have it figured out all the time. But yeah, every day is different. And I guess I see it more as a challenge. And yeah, it's been great to be an ambassador for St. Luke's in the community. And also now I have a great partnership and I'm an ambassador for Rodale Institute and just what they're doing in the community with health and food and wellness and having a farm at a hospital. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I just feel like sometimes it's full circle. Yeah. And I've just noticed how much food does affect my body and my blood sugars and just, yeah, eating well. I just feel so much better.
You had great. To learn how to feed your body correctly.
Yeah.
And so tell me about the relationship with St. Luke's. Obviously, they're supporting this show, but the farm is amazing there.
Yeah.
So what is your role there?
So I am an ambassador for St. Luke's, so I'm out in the community when I'm not racing. My first event with them was a type 1 diabetes camp, and Larry Holmes was there. It was back in 2019. It was such a cool experience. And then we kind of just went from there. And yeah, we picked up, we started doing events, and I'll be at the DNL Race Fest and the expo on November 8th and 9th. Yeah, I just love the relationship that we have in the community. And then their partnership with Rodale just elevates that. I mean, it's just crazy how connected it is because I did an internship at Bicycling Magazine and I race at the Velodrome. And then the Rodale family, they built the Velodrome. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like there's so much connection. To me, it's more of like this passion of like, this is what I want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. So touched on a few, you know, things that you do or did when you were first diagnosed, like the book and writing things down. What are some tools and things that you can share with listeners who have diabetes or don't have diabetes? What are things that kind of transcend all of those things that, you know, if you were telling me, like, I should start a routine, like, what's the starting point?
There is no one-size-fits-all approach to this, but I'd say food is a big factor, like how you fuel yourself, just the simple things, food, sleep, exercise. Right. So having a routine, I think, is really important. Just incorporating, like, say, hey, I'm going to go to bed maybe a half hour to an hour earlier every night. That's going to make a difference, too. I notice when I don't sleep enough, with maybe when I'm traveling, my blood sugars tend to be more elevated. That affects my sleep. That affects my mind, my body. And yeah, I notice that's a big factor. So I think sometimes people don't get enough sleep and that does affect a lot. Just maybe taking a bath. Taking some time for you, maybe not using your phone 30 minutes before you go to bed, maybe reading a book. I mean, just really those things, like, it's just routine. And sometimes you can deviate from that and that's okay. And then it's like, okay, how can I challenge myself next? And so I like going to the grocery store. Before it became a thing, I did. I like looking at the labels.
What do you mean before it became a thing?
Like people looking at the labels and saying, oh, it's processed. Like that's what I mean, like that.
Oh, like the whole foods and yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I just I feel like sticking to foods that are, they say, more simple, like one ingredient foods, like making soup and supporting your like local community shares. I get my share at the Good Farm. Yeah, I love supporting local and fueling my body well. So just getting creative, like, with my meals. I really do enjoy cooking. Mm. Since I've been home a little bit more last summer, I had my own garden. Mm. I was inspired by Rodale and just I went to one of their conferences. So it's just, like, challenging yourself to new things.
Mm.
And that exposed me to more. And I just noticed just a difference in my mindset and the community that I was around and the people that I was meeting. It was like, I was learning.
Mm-hmm. were there any particular, like, I don't know, classes or mentors that you had that, like, taught you to cook and how to cook well for yourself?
I'd say my mom is the biggest role model for me in the kitchen, just because she always kept me well fed and fueled when I was younger. Dinner was always really important. We sat down for dinner, even if I was on the go all day, like dinner was 15, 20 minutes for us to catch up. And I think that was an important time for me to enjoy my meal and also bond with my parents. I know things get busy, but I think that's really important. I think that's what I want to carry on to my future family, is just having that dinner time together.
Mm, okay. So your mom didn't like cook out of the Campbell soup can? Is that like...
She was really creative. So she kind of comes from an Italian side. She's one of four and she's younger. So she definitely has this... Yeah, she is creative and like, yeah, wants to help. And so she was always just very... She's a caregiver too. So it just like translates to just who she is.
Hmm.
It made a big impact. I think maybe that's why when I was diagnosed, my blood sugar wasn't... My A1C is your average blood sugar over a 3-month period, because I also was so active. But because I think I ate so well and I wasn't staying active, maybe, you know, obviously that diagnosis was delayed because of my choices and food and my relationship with like just exercise.
Yeah.
I grew up in Germany, so she was a lot in the kitchen with my grandfather, and he was a butcher and he was just always cooking. And it was funny because my grandmother was the businesswoman, and this is like back in the 60s. So it's like the roles reversed.
Yeah.
And so she just always followed him around too and learned so much from him.
Yeah. But, and in Europe they don't have as many processed foods as we have here.
It's crazy. They have bakeries on the side streets. Yeah. They have, meat and deli markets. It just, you go and get your fruit over there. Like, you walk to these places. Like, people are more active.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the infrastructure is different.
Right. It's built for walking and pedestrian traffic and mass transportation and all of the above, that people don't rely on cars. And anyway, that's a whole different topic. Okay. So let's talk about what's next for you. Any upcoming races, goals, or projects that you're excited about?
Yeah, so I took some time off. I missed Olympic qualification by one country spot. So you qualify for the Olympics as a nation. So you accumulate points over 2 years individually for your country. But then those points go into a system. And yeah, it's a very complicated system, but I missed it by one country spot. Or say the United States missed it by one. And so going into Paris, it was just a really hard time to see the Olympics going on, because I envisioned myself being there. And it's just really hard to not be there because I've been part of that Olympic qualification period. So that was really hard. But I'm looking forward to being out in Los Angeles, and the program is getting more funding and support. So the national team is based out of Los Angeles now, and there are resources in place. Back when I was a bit younger, a few more years ago, I was more solo. I was on my own. There wasn't a lot of like structure in the program, and the national government body didn't have a lot of funding. So I was kind of like going to LA on my own costs. And there was support for going to races like World Cups and World Championships, but that structure, everyday structure, wasn't there. And now it's in place. And that's been really important, to have a team environment, you know, to push each other. And there are other girls in that environment. And they're younger, and just being around those athletes, that fuels me. And so it's a really awesome environment to be a part of. And so although it's tough to be all the way out in LA, that's going to be where the home games is. And I definitely want to be there, and I want to give it one last shot. And so Olympic qualification starts in February.
Okay.
And I've been putting a lot of training in. I was just in Los Angeles for camp, and enjoying some time at home now. And then, I mean, still training really hard. I go through these periodizations in my training, so it's just like not stagnant. I go through 3 weeks on, 1 week off, so I keep building. And so I'm building towards February, which is the Pan American Championships and the first race towards Olympic qualification.
Okay. All right. So for listeners who are inspired by your story and your journey and are thinking, wow, I could probably do this, I can get active at least. Maybe I'm not going to go for the Olympics, but I can do a bike ride around the neighborhood. What advice would you give them?
No, it's more of like make it happen. Okay. Like, make it happen.
So it's like the Nike, just do it.
If you think more about it and all of the stuff that gets involved, oh, I don't have a bike, or my tires are flat, or my shoes aren't great. Like, action. Like, what am I going to, okay, just take the bike to the bike shop. It's going to maybe take a couple weeks, because don't do it in the spring because people are wanting to get all their bikes fixed. So do it now. Get your bike ready now for the spring. Go to the gym. Find a yoga class. There's hot yoga. There's so many things in this community that you can do and be involved with, because you never know who you meet or what that might spark. Mm. And also then in the spring and the summer, the trails are amazing. I mean, you can enjoy them now too. But the DNL trail, mm-hmm. that's phenomenal. The velodrome is always usually open.
Can people just go to the velodrome and ride a bike?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's an open public facility. It's Parks and Rec. Mm. So unless in the summer and stuff, it's a little more complicated because there's a calendar and there's specific training sessions. But there's also Rodale Park across the street. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's so many resources available. We have so many bike shops, the Velo Shop, Cutters Bike Shop, South Mountain Cycles, and Emmaus. I mean, there is a community out there. It's just go and make it happen. Don't think too much about it. And yeah, as long as you just keep moving, everything else just comes together.
Yeah. And it sounds like the community aspect is really important too, is, you know, fine. And you're right. This community, there's so many, even that we've found here with the radio station, that, you know, the community forms around a common cause, right? Or a common interest.
Yes. It's who you surround yourself with is the biggest thing.
Right.
Right. So yeah. That's kind of, if you look at your friends, it's like, all right, how are they going to, you know, motivate me or motivate each other? And I don't know where I'm going with that, but it's just who you surround yourself with that makes the biggest impact, and also how you think and how you think about yourself and what your goals are.
Okay. So if people want to follow your journey, where can they do that? You have social, you have a website, right?
Come to the Velodrome, support the Velodrome. That's the biggest thing, I feel, in the racing scene. I'm racing against other international riders, so just having that support from the community is really important. So seeing the stands filled at the Valley Preferred Cycling Center in the summer is huge. That would be the biggest support, not just for myself, but for the other riders as well. And you could follow me on social media. So on Instagram, just my name, Mandy Marquardt, MandyMarquardt. And that's also my website, just MandyMarquardt.com. And on Facebook, it's Mandy Marquardt Cycling. And yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to watching what you do next and how your journey continues. Thank you for being on Active Lehigh Valley, which is again supported by St. Luke's University Health Network on WDIY 88.1 FM.